Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why Johnny Manziel just made life harder for Jimmy Garoppolo.
And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why the Raiders might be having second thoughts about dragging John Gruden back to the sidelines. Speak for yourself, and a Thursday starts right now.
It's too early for that. Gruden's fine. Chucky. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined now by a couple of longtime NFL players, DeMarco Murray and Sean Merriman. Let's start with Jameis Winston, who addressed the media for the first time since being suspended 3 games after it was revealed that an Uber driver accused Winston of sexual assault back in 2016. Today, Jameis explained what he's learned from the incident.
I've just learned that you can't put yourself in these situations. And that's the most, you know, this happened, you know, after my rookie year. You know, and I think I've made a lot of positive changes since. Since I've been in this community, I've given it my all. You know I got some hard work to do to regain the trust of my fans, but building dream rooms, being in the community, being a great leader on and off the field, you know, my main goal is to be a great person, a great teammate, and a great leader every single day, and I think I've done that.
All right, Cowherd, you believe Jameis can still be the face of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Yeah, he was getting better every year. Completion percentage, passer rating, he's talented, but there's been damage done. You know, teams won't announce it, but you got area scouts, regional scouts, GMs, owners. They sit down, and he's not in the room. And there are doubters now. There are guys going, okay, Florida State, Tampa Bay. There's when they say who's all in, and there's 12 guys, 8 hands up, maybe 9. But damage has been done. His brand right now, this second today, unfortunately, is he's kind of immature. It's not, boy, he's really this. And it's too bad because if you go look at the stuff that matters to me, he's getting better. Dirk Cutter can coach. I liked it. But I think he's losing. I think he's lost some people in the building.
Yeah, I don't think his reputation is kind of immature. I think it is. He is immature. However, I love the way he handled himself today. I watched the entire exchange, and I thought he was incredible. He went well beyond my expectations. I thought there was some real humility, some real self-awareness. I thought he handled every question brilliantly. The questions I'll have, second to the last game, when he basically attacked a referee and they had to try to drag him off the field after he fumbled the ball and kind of cost him an opportunity to win a game, that kind of on-field immaturity, is that going to stop? I do think we probably, hopefully, pray to God, have heard the last thing about him off the field getting into trouble. But I still see some things on the field, the eating the W or whatever before the game and all this, where Jameis still has some growing up to do, and hopefully we see that.
Yeah, but at the same time, you look at when they ask him the questions, this is your last chance. And he really couldn't answer that. The answer is, yeah, it's your last chance. He's not acting like a franchise quarterback right now. He's not acting like the guy who they plan on spending the next 5 or 10 years with. Soon as he understands that, that's when he's going to grow up. The problem is, for me, I think it's going to be too late. He just keep making these immature decisions, right? You look at it and some of the stuff he was doing, I was like, man, I remember when I did that, but I was in high school. You know, I remember jumping on the table and screaming crazy. Yeah, I was like a sophomore in high school. You don't think a guy that's in his position, someone you're looking to build a team in the future around, is going out doing the things. We've heard him apologize before. We heard the same thing. I won't do that. But it just doesn't make sense because he's shooting himself in the foot over and over and over again. And when he's going to stop? And I think it might be to the point where it's too late, where he's not your guy going forward no matter what happens.
Yeah, you guys made all valid points. You look at him, and he's made some not wise choices since Florida State days. And looking at him now, this happened 2 years ago after his rookie year. Has he grown as a person? I think he has. He's done a lot for the community. He stayed out of trouble for the most part. You look at this, by no means should he have done what he done. I feel horrible for the lady that was involved, but he's done some great things. He's been well. He's played well when he's on the field, when he's not doing the antics, eating the W and things of that nature. I think this is his last chance. He couldn't answer that, but I think this is his last chance. But he's done some things. I think he can be the face of this organization if he continues to play well and do the right things off the field.
You know, one of the advantages he has is scarcity of quarterbacks. I mean, the NFL just had 8 running backs drafted. GMs are saying it's the best running back. You don't get 8 quarterbacks a year. So the bottom line is if you're in the same division of Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, and Drew Brees, it's easy for us to say, we got to move on. Right. You better have a plan or you're going to go 2-14.
The question for Jameis is, will guys follow him? He wants to be a leader. Will guys follow him? And so this happened in 2016. He's tried to move past it off the field. But again, I go back to on the field and the bouts of immaturity we see on the field and things that just go, is that really what I want my leader to do? And so today, we just showed the clip of Jameis's response. His teammates all had to answer a bunch of Jameis questions. And that's how you lose guys. Oh, I got to sit here and answer questions about Jameis and his off-the-field deal. That's when it becomes hard to follow a guy.
This did happen 2 years ago. So now it came out to light, so now they have to answer it. So I believe those guys are backing him 100%. He's a, you know, well-liked. I know Gerald McCoy there, played with him at Oklahoma. Well-liked guy on that team, but these interviews about Jameis Winston's off-the-field antics will have to stop, and I believe they will.
All right, let's move to Jimmy Garoppolo, who has faced some questions this week after going on a very public date with an adult film star. Admitting the dust-up taught him a lot about what it means to be the face of a franchise. But now a guy nobody wants as the face of their franchise, Johnny Manziel, has weighed in, offering the mature reaction you'd expect.
Jimmy Garoppolo going on a date, whining and dining a porn star. I still haven't wrapped my head around it.
What's wrong with it? All these soft NFL reporters saying, oh, man, he's going on a date with a – dude, let the guy live his life. He's going on a date. So what? Anything, you know, that's going to make him play better on a Sunday.
Anything he's going to play better on a Sunday or a Monday.
Man, Jimmy G, live your life, whatever you want. Whatever
and
you
I
want.
I love Jimmy G.
He's backing it up on the field.
He
hasn't lost a game, nothing. Guy's doing everything he's needed to do. He's enjoying life. So be it.
Oh, great. Whitlock, Johnny Manziel wraps his arm around Jimmy G, help or hurt.
Johnny Football helping Jimmy G string is not the combination you want. I don't think he did himself or Jimmy Garoppolo any favors. I don't understand why Johnny Manziel in his situation just didn't pass on this question. I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah.
He did Jimmy Garoppolo no favor. He breathed life into this story. Now Johnny Football is talking about it. But more than hurting Garoppolo, I think Manziel just hurt himself.
Oh, yeah, I thought literally Manziel ended his NFL career. Like, this is it. Like, when you say that, everybody is like, listen, Garoppolo just signed a $140 million contract. He's a good player. We don't look at those two as the same kind of guy. There's a difference between a mistake and a pattern. Jimmy G may have made a mistake. Johnny Manziel's got a life pattern. High school, college, pros. Like, you hear that and you're like, Johnny, this is why you're not a franchise quarterback. You don't have the self-awareness, knowing what your brand is, and then they ask you about it and you support it. It's like sometimes you can't say exactly what you feel.
If you're him. And I was one of the ones, I was backing Johnny Manziel the whole time. I felt like he transformed. He did everything he was supposed to do, going out and playing in CFL, getting, you know, showing up to practice, all of his workout videos on Instagram, his comeback and all. That was great. And he came out and said that, like, dude, why? Why? You know, because now you're taking everything that people have been saying about you this whole time.
The validation,
and everybody who was supporting, including me, myself, I'm like, man, this dude ready. He's going to make a comeback to the NFL. Johnny Manziel is getting back. After that comment, I can't see it.
I agree. I mean, I was on the train as well, but when you hear him saying these things, you go, what are you doing? Why are you speaking? Just stay away from this comment. You know, I think it's kind of irrelevant because it's Johnny Manziel, but I do think he hurt himself, but it's not hurting Jimmy G. But when you want to root for the guy, then he comes out and says this, then you put your head in your hands.
One of the downsides to making mistakes, you're a public figure, is often the wrong people come to your defense. As a politician, as a quarterback, you probably happen to you on Twitter. You do something, you're like, my bad. And the last guy in the world you want supporting you supports you. Like, Jimmy G's thing, I thought his apology was great.
Yeah.
Owned it, apologized. I'm like, I'm good. If you want to do that, do it in private. But then this now makes me think, oh, you've connected yourself inadvertently to Johnny Manziel. I don't think, again, I trust Jimmy G is going to be really good.
I'm not 100% sure, though, if Jimmy G's not hearing this from a lot of people, from other athletes or whatever, his peers, like, hey, man, the media's blowing this out of proportion. And so I hope Jimmy G has the self-awareness to go, I'm a franchise quarterback that just got $140 million. I could be a guy that the league wanted to wrap its arms around and make the face of the league. And this porn star thing has made that off limits. What advertiser, what brand does Pizza Hut want to partner up with Jimmy G? What brand? I'm not sure.
But he came out and said, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
What's everybody else's problem? And I'm looking at him like this. This is not his first time. This is not his first porn star he hung out with. This is not somebody in that industry he's been around. We just didn't care before because he wasn't a franchise quarterback. So the only reason why we're talking about it now, because of the $140 million contract, now a franchise is relying on him. But he's saying, like, hey, y'all tripping. Yeah. What's y'all problem? I've been doing this.
That's what you said yesterday. You believe it's...
Oh, no, I think he's, like, this is who he is, and maybe the Patriots knew it, and maybe there was a little concern about this is who he is. Sean, you would acknowledge, though, he has an opportunity with his talent, his good looks. He could have stepped right in there where Peyton Manning was and collecting all that money off
Brady.
All that money off the field, and he's limited at that now.
Yeah, but what's the problem in him being someone else? Do you have to be Drew Brees? Do you have to be Tom Brady or Peyton Manning? One of these? Do you have to be them?
No,
you don't have to be. So we're just judging. That's really all. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything illegal. We're just judging because of our ethics and what we think he should be talking to, who he should be around. He didn't do anything wrong. Now, he probably should have taken out to the hottest spot in L.A. You know, he probably shouldn't have done that. But at the same time, we're just judging based off of who he was with and not what he was doing.
I gave you this example the other day.
I don't know what he was doing.
You know what he was doing.
Okay, you're a public figure. I'm a public figure. It's legal to smoke pot in California.
Yeah.
If I took a picture of me smoking pot and put it on my Twitter, it's legal. Would my bosses like it?
It's the perception. The perception.
And so I'm not saying Jimmy's a bad guy. I'm like, but it's the only position in sports where you put franchise before the name of the position. You don't call it a franchise shooting guard and a franchise second baseman, franchise pass rusher. You call it a franchise quarterback because we give you the franchise. We're not going to draft another quarterback for 12 years. It doesn't feel good. Franchise quarterback, adult film star. It doesn't sound good to me.
My problem, if I have a problem, and look, maybe he has the self-awareness, Sean, that he doesn't care. But if there's an opportunity he's missing. He's blown up a lot of money off the field, potentially, and maybe he doesn't care about it.
I think he doesn't care. This is the same guy that said, hey, I'm better than Tom Brady. Who else would say that? He obviously he felt like that when he was in New England, but he couldn't say it. Like, you can't say anything else while you're out in New England. You can't. There's no porn stars in Foxborough, I'm sure. So, you know, now he's out. He's out. He's doing this thing. And to me, he's screaming like, this is me. I think, if anything, it's more of a reality check to know, like, hey, okay, I can't do that now. I'm somebody, right? It's more of a reality check. But to make headlines, it's not a big deal.
You and him think this is who he is.
Oh, I definitely think this is who he is.
Is that forcing?
No, that's look, man, if you see me out in Beverly Hills with a porn star, I like porn stars.
I'm screaming that. Welcome back. Sean Merriman back, joined now by Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings. Let's move to Oakland, where today John Gruden kicked off his first training camp since returning to the sidelines, but had to do it without their best defensive player, probably their best player, Khalil Mack, holding out for a contract extension. In fact, Adam Schefter reports Gruden and Mack have yet to actually speak since John took the Raiders' job in January. Whitlock, big deal to you?
I'm going to say no at the moment just because I just think it's a negotiating ploy by Khalil Mack. I think the reports are Gruden has reached out. He just hasn't gotten a response back from Khalil Mack. I just think Khalil Mack is playing hardball. And so right now, I'm just going to call it a standard negotiating standoff. I'm not going to read more into it that there is some kind of unrecoverable disconnect between Gruden and Khalil Mack.
There's also a report, though, they're miles apart. Miles apart. So I don't want to put it all on Khalil Mack. He's the best player defensively. He and Von Miller, Aaron Donald, are the three best defensive players maybe in the league. Doesn't it seem weird if you took over a company 2 months in, I hadn't talked to my best employee. I mean, wouldn't you like Uber to his house, knock on doors?
Yeah.
Something. I mean, something?
Nope. Yeah, he should be showing up at his doorstep. You know, not just a text and, hey, how you doing? Can we talk? No. When can we talk? You fly out there. You come and see him. And this just shows the fact that a lot of things have been said about John Gruden over the years with him and players and some players not being able to trust him. He's the best hype man, best hype coach that ever came through the NFL, ever. He can get the whole team hyped up and riled and on the same page for his own benefit. But if you don't reach out to the best defensive player in the National Football League, there's a problem. And I know you're an offensive coach. You're more worried about Derek Carr. You're more worried about the wide receivers in the offensive front. But Khalil Mack is a once-in-a-lifetime player. You got to fix that. And if you don't fix that, that shows me what kind of coach and kind of person you are. Because he has enough power. He signed that big deal so he can make some things happen. And if they're that far apart, you should be the one that's saying, we can't make it happen right now. We can't structure something, but we want you here. And if he hasn't done that yet, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's my problem, and that's what I'm going with. I don't know what has transpired as far as communications between John Gruden and Khalil Mack, but I don't need you to come to my doorstep. I don't expect him to go to the extreme, but at least let it be known that I have reached out to Khalil Mack. I have let him know how important he is to this team. He has a C on his chest for a reason. Forget the potential of NFL Defensive Player of the Year candidate. Like, he is your captain, a team captain, a leader on that team, on that defense. And the reports are there's been no relationship, there's been no communication. That's just a bad look as a head coach coming in with this buzz from the fans, the media, the expectations, all of that, and you haven't communicated to your best player. I have a problem with that.
Communication's a two-way street now, though.
It is, but I guarantee Derek Carr didn't have to reach out.
By the way, listen, two of their first three picks were offensive players. They really needed defensive help. So, you know, I don't think it's cryptic. I mean, Reggie McKenzie wanted to help the defense. Gruden's like, no, I want offense. You're kind of sending a message that defense is second class. You got to hold a Derek Carr.
Let's be clear, though, here. John Gruden, in his original stint with the Raiders, built a Super Bowl contending team. As soon as they went to the Super Bowl after he left, he goes to Tampa Bay, and with a great defense and Brad Johnson at quarterback, he won a Super Bowl. He's been successful everywhere he's been. Some of the hype about him has been the golden touch he seems to have. It's not all just coming out of his mouth, and he is full of bluster and says some things to hype himself, there's no question. But he has produced results, and he has produced great results with defensive players. I don't think he's got amnesia. I think he knows you got to have the Derek Brooks, the Warren Sapps, the John Lynches to have success. I think he's got to know he needs Khalil Mack.
Of course you need it. There's 32 teams in the league that needs Khalil Mack. The problem is that you have to go beyond what you would do as a head coach. You have the power. You're going to be here for a long time. You can make things happen. You can find a way to get in front of Khalil Mack or Khalil Mack to get in front of you, however that works. If you haven't even made communication to me, it sounds like, okay, we're going to go out the offense side of the ball. I'm going to make myself and this offense look good, and whatever happens on the defense side of the ball happens. That's how I'm looking at it. If you don't reach out to me or find a way, I just don't see Khalil Mack playing hardball with the head coach. Maybe with the organization, but not playing hardball with John Gruden.
My memory is that they tried to go basically all offense for a couple of years with Derek Carr, and the defense kept letting them down. I can't believe Gruden is this stupid that he's watched the Raiders with Derek Carr score points and not be able to.
I don't think it's stupid. I think his brand is offense. And if John fails, he doesn't want to also crush his brand. John wants to build the, by the way, Pete Carroll, at both USC and Seattle, the offensive line's gone into the tank. Why? Because Pete's brand is defense. He's always going to take care of the defense so it looks good for his brand.
See, I buy that, because when you're offensive or defensive-minded coach, head coach at that, you tend to, and you know this, you can speak to this, you tend to stay on one side of the ball and make sure that your side of the ball isn't the reason why we're not successful.
Thank you.
That's important to offensive and defensive-minded coaches.
I saw it with Dick Vermeil when he basically got run out of St. Louis for Mike Martz. He came over to Kansas City and he built an offense because he wanted to prove he could do it with Mike Martz. I just don't see this with John Gruden because as much as he's known for offense, his brand is really about winning.
Yes, I agree.
It's winning. That's what I remember about him in his two previous stints.
I think
not great offense.
Your memory is fuzzy. His last 6 years in Tampa, 3 of the 6 losing seasons, the 2 of the winning seasons were 9-7. It wasn't a great division. He left, had alienated a lot of people. He'd never developed the next great quarterback, and he had a losing record. That's the reality of it. He took Tony Dungy's blueprint and roster, took the momentum, played a team that he knew their plays. I think his brand is bigger than reality.
All right, welcome back. DeMarco Murray and Sean Merriman are back. Let's move to Dallas, where Jerry Jones took a break from stirring the national anthem pot yesterday to actually talk some football, filled in a question about Jason Garrett that seems to pop up around this time every year.
Jerry, it's been a few years since we've asked you the proverbial hot seat question, and maybe you kind of already answered it, but is this a playoffs or bust year for Jason?
No. That's the best answer I can give and the fairest.
All right, Cowherd, should Garrett be on the hot seat?
No. I think there's about a third of the NFL that doesn't even feel stable. There's about 50% of the NBA that doesn't feel stable. Stability is a big thing for free agents. Jason Garrett, I don't think anybody thinks he's awful. But they don't maybe think he's Belichick or Peyton, but the Cowboys, to me, feel stable. They got the offensive line. They have young pass rushers. I like their defensive coordinator. They got a head coach. They have their franchise quarterback. They have their left tackle. That's more than 90% of this league. They don't have Philadelphia's roster, but Dallas is always a little bit of a circus. They don't feel like a circus to me.
Everything you describe could be credited to Jerry Jones. He's basically the general manager, controls the personnel on the roster. Jason Garrett coaches them up. And I don't – the way the question was framed, is it playoffs or bust, I don't think Jerry has any choice but to say no, because who knows? Dak Prescott gets hurt. Ezekiel Elliott gets hurt. Who knows what could happen that could stop them from making it to the playoffs? I believe Jason Garrett is on the hot seat. But Jerry's going to let things play out. There's no reason to say beforehand, yeah, playoffs or bust or he's out of here. That doesn't help your team. That doesn't create stability, confidence in your coach headed into the season. Look, before Wade Phillips got dumped, Jerry said he doesn't fire coaches at midseason. He fired Wade Phillips at midseason. Jerry, you know, answered the question to the best of his ability, was completely honest. And, you know, Jason Garrett's on a hot seat, though.
I don't think he is. I agree with you. I think stability is a huge factor when you look at Jason Garrett's situation. And his 8th year is going next year. He's had one losing season. 2 years ago, he was a coach of the year in the NFL. He's had one playoff win. It's the only mystery, a big mystery, because you've had so many great players. I think he's handled being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys extremely well. Being a player is hard, but I can't imagine being the head coach. And you look at situations off the field, Dez Bryant, Ezekiel Elliott, he's handled those so well. And we had a death my first 4 years, and he handled that well. He brought us together as a team. He's a great motivator, great coach, and he gets a bad rep from times. Romo was there. Jason Witten was there. Alphas. So now this is his team. The big name guys, they're not there anymore. So this is his year. Take control of the team and run the team the right way.
I think publicly he's not on the hot seat. You know, but Jerry Jones has always done it. He's done that with coaches. Like you said, my former coach, Wade Phillips, he's done that with players. You know, when Dez Bryant or anybody came out and they had any kind of big outburst or any legal troubles, he's always back to players. And to me, that's kind of always been the biggest problem with them. It's people feel secure, right? He comes out and backs people that probably shouldn't be backed. He comes out and supports people that probably shouldn't be supported. And when you do that, you kind of, you know, make a false sense of hope in that locker room, a false sense of stability, like I'm going to be there in the future. I don't have to worry about anything. But I think behind closed doors, you think Jason Garrett doesn't know that what happened with Wade Phillips?
I see what you're saying as far as, but I think from when I was there 4 years ago, when he took the backs of our players, it just made the unit so much more cohesive. We're going to go fight for that guy. He loves the players. He's going to fight.
Marco, you said something interesting beforehand that just struck me as funny. 8 years, And, you know, the only problem is there's one playoff victory. And that to me is like saying, you know, I got a quarterback, but the only problem is he's missing both arms.
Well, you look at it. My first 4 years, Romo was hurt 2 seasons. So he didn't have his best quarterback. Last year, his best weapon on offense, Ezekiel Elliott, was away for 10 games. He hasn't had the personnel. There's been injuries that happened to your starting quarterback. Kyle Orton came in 4 years ago. We're trying to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. Chip Kelly's second year.
It's a great
he beats
thing.
Us to go to the playoffs. So we didn't have our starting quarterback.
Lucky for Philadelphia, Carson Wentz never went down. I mean, all hell
would have rolled. Right. Let's move to Mike Tomlin, who took some heat last week from one of his former stars, James Harrison, on this network. Undisputed that Bill Belichick is a better coach. Tomlin needs to be more disciplined. Yesterday, Tomlin was asked what he thought about the criticism and basically said, not much.
He has an opinion. He's entitled to it. He doesn't play for us right now, man. I'm focused on 2018, man. That soap opera stuff, I'll let you guys, you know, play that game.
Whitlock, do you think Harrison's damage, criticism of Tomlin all last week on this network, does it hurt Mike's reputation?
I think it hurts his reputation, but I also think it's going to help his motivation. And I think that's more important right now. I think the Pittsburgh organization is so supportive of its head coaches that it can create some complacency and people don't have to work on their problems. And so I think James Harrison has actually done Tomlin a favor. I like Mike Tomlin when motivated and backed into a corner. I think Terry Bradshaw criticized him a couple years ago. Now James Harrison. I think we're going to see the best Mike Tomlin this year.
I think people have made their decision on Tomlin, and they're not moving off it. It's almost political. Like, when's the last time you had a conversation with somebody that was diametrically opposed to you politically? An hour later, you're like, oh, she totally changed their mind. Mike Tomlin's reputation is established. Some people are into his highly emotional style. You know, went out in the field, like he was going to trip a guy. Like, that was a moment for me. I'm like, whoa, I'm out on this. Like, I think he's fine. I think he gets exposed against Belichick. I think his teams are too emotional. They're not tight. They're not buttoned up. That's my opinion. But the people who like him, I'm not moving them off their opinion. They like the emotion stuff. That's his brand. Like, if Belichick's Mr. Covert Secret, Tomlin's Mr. I'd run through a wall for Mike Tomlin. And a lot of people like that brand.
I think Mike Tomlin's a great coach, but this is not the first time we've heard that about them being unorganized or not disciplined over there. We also need to remember who it's coming from. You know, James Harrison didn't leave there on his own terms. He didn't leave there in a happy place. He's talking about a team that, you know, he left and went to their arch rival just despite them. So, you know, we're hearing from somebody that's a little bit disgruntled, that felt like he was done wrong by the organization, and then you went to the most strictest coach in all of football, the most strictest organization. So, of course, if you're comparing the two, yeah, they might be a little bit more relaxed or unorganized there with the Steelers than they are with the Patriots, but look who's talking. Look who is coming from. And I think that's what we need to pay attention to more.
When you think about the Pittsburgh Steelers, New England Patriots, you never think they have these issues going on in-house. Last year, the story about Belichick and Brady, we were all like, wow, we couldn't believe it. Now with Tomlin and hearing James, what James Harrison said, I mean, you have to believe it, but you also have to not give in to it, as Sean mentioned. He is a little disgruntled. He just left there on a bad situation, but having friends that play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm hearing that there's some issues that is going on in the locker room, so James Harrison may have a point there.
I think he's validating those of us who think Tomlin's fine, but can be exposed. You've said that before. I don't think he's a bad coach.
I think Mike Tomlin is capable of improvement, but DeMarco, I would like for you, if you can, put a little more meat on your bone, on those bones, in terms of you've heard from guys in Pittsburgh that you think there are issues within that locker room?
I've heard guys say that it's not all peaches and cream as if we see it as, just like the New England situation. We all thought it was Bill Belichick running, Bill Belichick and Brady coexisting well, but you hear these stories and you really don't know because you don't see it. Now there's stories starting to come out from a former player who had a long, great career there, who's saying these things.
By the way, the two coaches in the league that tend to be pro player and pro emotion are Pete Carroll and Tomlin. We saw Pete's team unravel a little bit next year. Tomlin and Pete Carroll are very much the player's coach, and they like their players to be loud and sometimes to the fault of both systems.
I'm going to say, I'm not sure that Tomlin likes his players to be loud. I think that Tomlin doesn't know how to get a very difficult locker room under his control. Big Ben, to me, can be immature and has been immature. Antonio Brown is one of the biggest personalities in football. Le'Veon Bell has been upset about his contract for 2 or 3 years now. That's a lot. You had James Harrison in that locker room. That's a lot to deal with. And that's, again, why I'll go back to, I think James Harrison has done Tomlin a favor. The organization is so patient with their head coaches. I don't think there's been enough pressure on Mike Tomlin. I like bacon. You got to turn some fire on to cook it. And that's what I think Mike Tomlin needs. He needs a fire lit under his ass. And James Harrison may have just done it.
Welcome back. Joined now by NBA insider Chris Mannix. We don't get Chris much, so we're not letting him leave the room when he shows over. And the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre, J-Mac. Let's move to Vegas, where an AAU game featuring LeBron James' son was just canceled amid security concerns after an unruly crowd showed up to get a glimpse of the king. The new Lakers star also announced today that his talk show, The Shop, will debut on HBO next month and released a clip addressing the pressure his kids feel to follow in his footsteps.
What do you say to your kid, though, like living up to you being their dad, and they're playing the same sport that you played better than anyone else in the world has ever played it? How do you give them a peace of mind that they don't have to be you?
I still regret giving my 14-year-old my name because of that.
Right.
Like, when I was younger, obviously, I didn't have a dad. So my whole thing, I was like, whenever I have a kid, not only is he going to be a junior, I'm going to do everything that this man didn't do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're going to experience things that I didn't experience. The only thing I could do is give them the blueprint, and it's up to them to take their own course whenever that time happens.
All right, Whitlock, we got the gym story, a little bit of a circus around LeBron. Is it too out of hand for you?
Too out of hand is I don't know if I want to comment on that because I'm not sure how I feel. But what I think I'm looking at is LeBron James is actually LeVar Ball. And I'm not saying that to disparage anybody. I think it's kind of an accidental thing. But he's like living the life LeVar Ball dreamed of. LeBron actually has the kid who seems like in eighth grade is the phenom that's going to be the next thing. LeVar thought it was going to be LaMelo. LeBron signed a deal with HBO. He's not doing a Facebook show. It's HBO where he gets to talk and talk about his family and be around a bunch of celebrities. The LeVar Ball circus being run well by LeBron James, and it just kind of makes me think how LeBron living under that 24/7 microscope out here in LA and just diving deeper into celebrityhood, how is that going to play out for him and his entire family is an interesting question.
Well, I mean, I look at him like Ronaldo. Like, LeVar Ball is seeking attention. Ronaldo and the royal family just draw attention. Like, I don't think doing a barbershop show, everybody in L.A. has got a show. LeVar Ball is doing stunts.
No, I agree. This is like the high-class version of it. But that spotlight, in terms, his son just tried to play an AAU game and they couldn't do it.
But,
because there's a circus around. There's such celebrities.
Well, but if Beyonce went to a recital and she had her daughter there, they'd rush the stage. I think what's happened is celebrity has become bigger in America. Now the social media has just amplified celebrity. Everybody's a celebrity.
I get it, but you just compared LeBron to Beyonce.
Yeah.
That's new for athletes, I think.
Yes.
And that's what's different. This is the space LeVar wanted to live in that LeBron is actually living in.
I think in that context, you're right that LeVar and LeBron are comparable orbits, so to speak. However, the incident that happened, LeVar would revel in that. LeVar would enjoy that because any publicity is good publicity for the big baller brand, and he would love to be a part of that experience. Whereas I guarantee you, LeBron, in the hours afterwards, was bitterly disappointed that happened, that his kid couldn't play, that he couldn't watch his kid play. That's the biggest difference for me between those two men.
I mean, guys, when you look at the situation with his eighth grade kid, and he's doing a crossover on a guy, and it gets up 1.6 million views on Instagram, and LeBron's son trying to dunk gets 3.6 million views on YouTube, okay? He's in eighth grade. What's going to happen in ninth grade? If you think this is not a problem, it's only going to get significantly worse. They're going to have to start to play his games at bigger venues. There is an insatiable appetite for all things LeBron. You open your show with LeBron for like a month straight, right? Yeah. We do a post on The Big Lead about LeBron, automatic clicks. His son is next. It's going to start eighth grade, ninth grade.
I would worry about it if I didn't trust LeBron. But I know, look at LeBron's best friends. They're all good dudes. I mean, again, there's a lot of athletes. Johnny Manziel couldn't handle a week in the NFL. LeBron's gone 15 years as the most talked about player. We don't have an incident.
Colin, only thing I would say is LeBron is not Superman. He's not Jesus. All men fall. All women fall. And this situation, this type of attention, is unusual for human beings. And, you know, I don't think LeBron is the most unique human being to ever hit the planet. Hollywood swallows people up. And again, I think Chris's point is right. LeBron's mentality is completely different than LeVar's. But again, he's swimming in that orbit, and that's the most difficult swim I think there is in the world. And I have some sympathy for his kids and LeBron. Hope that he knows what he's taking on by coming out here to L.A. and wanting to orbit in that celebrity world all the time. It's dangerous.
The mistake is, though, I get what he's saying, where the mistake is naming his kid after him there, because it was an incredible amount of undue pressure on him. There's a reason, one of the reasons Michael Jordan's kids weren't, you know, revered like Michael Jordan early on. It was Jeffrey and it was Marcus. If they were named Michael Jr., might have even more pressure on him back then.
All right, to Kevin Durant, who continues to endear himself to his peers, going on CJ McCollum's podcast and basically telling the Portland Star his team has no shot at winning a title.
Why are you mad about this stuff?
Bro, I'm in the league. What do you mean? Why am I mad about this
stuff?
I'm in the Western Conference. I got to play you MFers all the time anyway, as it is, over and over again.
You know you guys aren't going to win a championship.
Bro, we have the team. We have the capabilities. Anything is possible. We can win a championship.
I suggest you just keep playing, man, and don't worry about what goes on at the top of things.
We right there at the top of things. We was a third
Relax.
Seed last year, bro. We was right there. We was just slightly below 1-2.
But how'd you play?
Some unfortunate situations happened in the first round.
How'd you play?
Some unfortunate circumstances.
Like
happened.
An 8 seed.
We did not play like an 8 seed. That's ridiculous.
You know I'm only saying this because you be shooting little shots at the Warriors and all that at me all the time. So this is my time to throw a little jab at you.
It's okay, man.
All right, afterward, the two got into it on Twitter with McCollum responding to Barstool Sports' Big Cat, who asked if he could call KD the B word. Said McCollum, quote, "I still think the B word is harsh and shouldn't be used. He know that decision was soft, but I respect it. It's like getting jumped with your brothers by a gang you should have beat, then joining the gang that jumped you and your brothers 2 months later and forgetting about your bros." To which Durant replied, "So I would get into a gang fight, lose, plot on my brother for 2 months in our home, and then go get the gang we lost to and beat him up? You think that low of me, CJ? I just did your podcast a favor. Snakes in the grass, boy, I tell you. Cowherd, whose side are you on here?"
Team Durant. Yeah, I mean, listen, Durant's, he's Uber. He's making a lot of good taxi services irrelevant. He's the talk of the league with LeBron. Golden State has vanquished the West. And a lot of these good teams in the West are just, I mean, they know. They're just looking up. He's making a lot of people not named LeBron irrelevant. There are games he makes Steph Curry irrelevant. He makes coaching irrelevant. And I think there's some animosity there. Durant's getting under people's skin. It's amazing in America. We all celebrate mobility. Baseball. God, Yankees got 9 more guys today. Celebrated. One guy goes to the Warriors, and I think he has made a lot of people less relevant, and they don't like it.
I'm on Durant's side just because I think he's being authentic. And this is who he is. He doesn't mind going back and forth with people over social media or wherever. That's the same as me.
Authentic is the word here. I was texting with an NBA player before the show, and I said, dude, CJ McCollum on his own podcast said, hey, you know, this soft analogy about mobility. And then he goes on Twitter and talks about gang jumping and brothers. Like, if that's your opportunity with Durant to go hard at him and he went soft and then he comes on social media and goes hard, and I think CJ McCollum's taking some hits around the league today.
Yeah, look, my baseline on Kevin Durant has always been we all leave places for places we like a little bit more, so I never begrudged him actually going to do that. He's going to leave maybe Golden State after next season,
yeah,
$80 million richer and probably with three championships. So whatever. That being said, CJ McCollum lent voice to what I'm sure a lot of players thought at the time and still believe now,
yeah,
that Kevin Durant took the easy way out. That he had a chance to fight it out with his team, Oklahoma City, which was right there, as we know, in beating them a few years back, but he took the easy way out. We all know, we've all been in locker rooms where guys say one thing on the record and they say something very differently off the record. How they feel what they say publicly is not necessarily how they feel with what they say privately. CJ McCollum is just one of the few guys that's out there willing to say what I'm sure a lot of players actually feel.
Let me defend Kevin Durant, though. He has made the Warriors virtually unbeatable, and he left Oklahoma City because of Westbrook's difficulty. We've seen Westbrook back-to-back years unravel in the first round. I mean, unravel. We can say winners and losers. We do that in sports. Durant's won this thing. He's been a great teammate. He's by the way, it's Curry's team, but he's the finals MVP. And in the end, I'll go back to, okay, he's collecting hardware. He was the second-best player in the world at Oklahoma City. He's still the second-best player in the world. He has not elevated from the 20...
Chose a soft path, man. And okay, I agree with him pushing back, but I agree. I don't have a problem with him pushing back against CJ. But CJ's right, and that's what a lot of guys around the league think. And there's some truth to it. And Durant's got to live with it, and he seems to be living with it fine. And he pushes back when he hears it. I don't have a problem with either one of these guys. I do believe Durant's being authentic, but I also think CJ's...
I don't even know if he's living with it fine. I mean, based on his social media attacks, he's not living with it fine. This is why, and I have no reporting to back this up, this is why I firmly believe after this year, this time next year, he's back with the Thunder.
I believe it.
Because it's the one place, Jason, that he can go to and he could make everything right again. He could take his three championships, and Oklahoma City never burned that bridge. They're always very, very, very nice to Kevin Durant publicly.
By the way, we gotta go. LeBron went back somewhere.
All right, time for last call. Let's move to Conor McGregor, who pled guilty to disorderly conduct for his attack on a UFC bus back in April, but will receive no jail time as part of his plea deal. Cowherd, did McGregor get off too easy?
Not really.
Yeah.
He did something stupid, but what does it rise to?
Well, look, I think he got treated like a lot of first-time offenders. I think over here in America, I don't know if he has any other cases. So I'm not going to say he got off too easy. He probably got off like a lot of people with his money and fame and are just first-time offenders. I don't think anyone got hurt. He dodged a bullet. See you tomorrow.